Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. I'm Anastasia. It's Tuesday, May 15th, 2012. Now, tonight's show won't have a number for live questions, but the call-in number for listening is 917-889-8292. Also, I'd like to ask that if you like our show, click on the show page and click follow. And don't forget to tell a friend about us. Now, many Starseed are awakening around the planet and are looking for the information that they need to move ahead in their lives. And they can find a lot of that on our website. Our main website is starseedhotline.com, where we do have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also offer a terrific support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started with our program in just a moment, but first I should tell you that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. Through her discovery, you can find out if you have star markings and how these determine your natural state and rites of passage. We also offer Stage 2 readings, which are a one-on-one phone consultation by Lavendar, Ariel, or myself to assist individual Starseed with their missions on the planet. You can find out more about Stage 2 readings at Lavendar's World, Anastasia's World, and Ariel's World on our website. Sierra also offers a Stage 4 support service for contactees and abductees, and you can find out about this service by entering Sierra's World on our main website, which once again is starseedhotline.com. Well, friends, this will be my last stint as guest host for Starseed Radio Academy, as Ariel, Lavendar, and Sierra will be back on the show next week. I want you to know that I've appreciated the opportunity to be with you for these episodes, and I thank everybody who gave me your support and encouragement along the way. And you all need to know that we wouldn't have even had a show the past 3 weeks if it hadn't been for the devotion of Sahar, since she ran the switchboard. So we all need to give special thanks to her. She's been the best programming partner I could have asked for. Thanks, Sahar, for everything you did to keep the show going. In tonight's show, we're going to conclude our interviews with lifelong contactee and abductee John Foster, who is the author of Imminent Discovery and To Earth from Heaven. If you haven't heard his previous two interviews, I do suggest you download them from our archives and have a listen. His website is fosterufos.com, and his intriguing books can also be obtained at Amazon.com. I need to thank John for spending so much of his time sharing his experiences with us during these shows. John is a spiritual warrior who has come to understand a most important truth, that through his decades of high strangeness encounters, he has come to know himself and embrace the multidimensional dance of life. Now, this is high awareness. It was hard-earned, and it's a heartfelt gift that he shares with all of us. So now it's time to introduce John Foster and start tonight's show. Hello, John. Welcome to tonight's show. We're glad to have you back again.
Well, it's a pleasure being here.
Well, we are certainly happy to have you. And tonight is going to be our conclusion, regrettably, of your wonderful stories and experiences as a UFO contactee, abductee. And we'd like to start off tonight's show by entering into your book, Earth from Heaven. That's what we want to talk about tonight. It's a wonderful conclusion of your experiences. And I wanted to talk to you about Chapter 4. You titled that chapter, We Are One, We Are Courage. Would you let our listeners know a little bit about the experience that happened in that chapter where you were walking through walls? And this will probably be our last story of your encounters before we go into a summary of what your take on all of this is about.
Okay, yeah, this was I would have been about 13 to 15, someplace in there, years old. and we were camping at Lake McConaughey in western Nebraska. Two families, they had two kids, and my two sisters and I and my folks. Anyway, there were huge crafts that showed up near the outlet, what's called the Morning Glory Outlet, at the dam. And many things happened. Eventually, the other young fellow and I were levitated out over the lake to a craft, and we were encouraged to walk through the wall of the craft. In other words, just penetrate what seemed to be a steel wall. And the other fellow was not afraid, but I was, and I wouldn't do it. And so the if your listeners remember, there normally was a voice that we heard that was the source was unseen a lot of times. Sometimes it came from the craft and sometimes a light. But the voice encouraged me to walk through, and he said if I wouldn't do it, he would help me. So he helped me, and I found myself inside, and several things happened inside. And the other fella and I finally, we looked at the shore where our sisters had been, and we saw no one there. And so we felt sort of isolated. And he got a little angry, and he decided he was going to walk through the wall, so he did. And I didn't, and he must have gone to the parking lot because I didn't see him on shore. And so finally I mustered enough courage, and I went through the wall. But, of course, when we were out over the water and I levitated to the shore. And one significant thing about this is that I did have out-of-body experiences. And normally, whoever was with me and I saw our bodies, and we were in a different location, and the bodies seemed to be frozen like a statue. In this case, I didn't see our bodies, so your listeners can conclude what they would like. In other words, that would be an indication maybe it was a physical levitation.
Did you have any physical sensation as you passed through the wall?
I can't remember right offhand now. I don't remember if I did when I wrote the book. There were other times where I would feel a slight sensation, when I passed through something.
Right. And did this happen quite a bit?
Not a lot, no. The levitation occurred, you might say, semi-frequently, not actually frequently, but there were times, this was one time where they definitely wanted me to know that whatever was happening, my being could penetrate through that wall, and it seemed to be a steel wall, not very sturdy. So I don't know what to take from that, except that there, my conclusions of all of the encounters include an integration of other dimensions with our dimension. In other words, we are somewhat captive as young people, especially as we go up through the grades in school, we're sort of oriented towards what we call three-dimensional physical reality. And experiences like this indicate that there is much more to life than physical reality.
Well, that's for certain, and that's just an outstanding example. And we are trained to have minds closed to other dimensions, metaphysical reality, and capabilities. Of course, this calls to mind the so-called miracles of the Bible, such as Christ walking upon the water and countless other examples and stories throughout history of these kinds of capabilities in human beings. And in fact,
my encounters indicate that those things were way true, where people kind of scoff at the Bible, for instance, in the Old Testament, and some of the things that happened there. But my experiences indicate that it's likely.
Well, right. The whole concept of ascending consciousness or bridging the gap between the third dimensional reality to higher dimensional reality, raising one's consciousness and energy, empowers one then to be a walker between worlds and to do things like that. So that's, go ahead.
Another example of my encounters is that I ask for this. I ask for the truth, no matter where it may lead, even if it killed me at one point, and because I knew something was going on that I couldn't understand. And eventually all of this unfolded, and I recalled all those times in the past that were just mind-blowing.
A famous spiritual teacher named Carolyn Mace once commented that if we ask to see the face of God and to know the entire truth, we better fasten our seatbelts because things will get pretty bizarre and uncomfortable. Our worlds will be turned upside down, and truly that's what happened to you. And I think that many people do cling to old paradigms because it's safe. And as we become explorers of new territory, new possibilities, new cosmic realities and truths, we are going to be going through this sort of stretching and mind-bending and distortion-type experiences, what seems really hard for our minds to cope with, but it is sort of molding us into something greater. We're being kneaded, so to speak, like a piece of dough that originally starts out as a cold lump, right? But when you knead it, it begins to rise, and it becomes a nourishing substance that can feed others. The loaf rises because it's been pummeled. And this is what happens to us as spiritual beings. We go through these processes to become really vessels of light and be able to help and teach and feed others the truth, which is what you've done with your stories, John, and your encounters. You're able to open people's minds, which, of course, is not a problem for this audience, but for the public at large, this is still a big effort underway. So let's talk for a moment about openness. You have a chapter called Openness in To Earth from Heaven, Chapter 6.
That was... there were two themes to that experience. This took place north of Waverly, Nebraska, which is just a few miles east of Lincoln. And I had two friends with me, and we were coaxed into the bell-shaped object. If your listeners want to click on fosterufos.com, then click to drawings. I believe I have a drawing of a bell there. Anyway, the bell was seen in the movie Encounters of the Third Kind also, which tells me that whoever did the movie actually had encounters. At any rate, at the last of the experience, we saw a pipe attached to the bell, and it went out into the cornfield or milo field and turned down and penetrated the ground. And there was a valve on the pipe, and the voice told me to turn the valve on, and I wouldn't do it. And eventually he said that they were from another place and that they were here to help humankind, and they couldn't do it unless they could establish a connection or a link with us, the Earth, and that meant me in that case, if I would open up and accept, establish communication with them, that they could more readily help humankind. The link of helping humankind was a theme that occurred throughout all those 46 years. When I was 2 or 3 years old, they told me they were here to help humankind, and the way they did it was to enlist help from people like myself. Okay.
John, was the pipe a metaphor?
The pipe was then a metaphor, yes. And my friends, the voice encouraged me to open. My friends said, don't do it. We don't know what will happen. And so I didn't do it. But in that encounter at Waverly, we were in high school. Also, there were pipes involved at the Bethany Grade School Playground Encounter, which is the first lengthy encounter I describe in the book, Human Discovery. And,
well, that's, just really fascinating, because in a dream state, of course, we experience symbol as the powerful language of the unconscious mind. And in this case, you are receiving a lot of symbols and symbolic images that contain metaphoric and other messages that, as they arise in your from your memory, out of your unconscious mind, the brain translates these things into symbols, which contain many concepts. But the idea of a pipe is so apropos for communication, because in spiritual channeling, for instance, a trained channel will build a light pipe that ascends from their bodies up to the higher frequency dimensions, to the point of contact with their higher guides. So a pipe is very apropos as a symbol of communication via frequency, and that's just right on target.
Well, the one thing that really I was really shocked, somewhat shocked at, was that when I finally realized you had all my recollections, was that they used symbolism profusely throughout the entire 46 years. And also, I believe they used symbolism for other UFO encounters. In other words, some of the craft you couldn't really call spaceships and some of the objects, but they were suggestions as to, for instance, the wind of saucer of something we could use to travel in space or to travel multidimensionally. And a friend of mine, after I had all my recollections, sent me an article that showed a saucer very, very similar, almost identical to the Windows saucer, but it was without windows, and it was one of the military's advanced aerospace projects where they used microwave bursts from the ground to propel it into orbit and to maneuver it in orbit. Now, another thing that's really interesting about that is I just saw a program on TV the other day, and there's a scientist that has figured out that maybe the Great Pyramids were used to shoot orb energy into the air and around the Earth and also to objects in orbit, which might propel vehicles, you might say. So the ancient vehicles may have been propelled by the similar reason.
Well, that's just fascinating and intriguing. Anyone who follows what's going on with science now, it's escalating at such a rapid rate, John. They're finding out so many needs to develop new scientific paradigms, a new physics, to explain the many findings that they're discovering, for instance, with the Fermi telescope, where they are finding an immense bubble, or actually two space bubbles at the galactic core, that defies present physics. So science has been, in our lifetime, at a very infantile state. When, from the 3D perspective, we have felt so advanced, but from the cosmic perspective, we've just been barely moving the needle in a progressive direction. But now we are finding that there's so many things that can't be explained by science. So that when, for instance, 25 years ago, we heard discussions about the possible uses of the pyramids, people could sort of howl at that and say, well, that's not possible, that's science fiction. Yesterday's science fiction is now today's reality. And as we move forward, we're going to see incredible leaps. We already are in science and in genetics and in astrophysics, and on it goes. So that these discussions that we're having right now are emerging very rapidly out of the arena of fantasy into probability.
That's one thing that I wanted to state today, was that as I linked the phenomenon to what we know in science and physics, the new concepts become somewhat practical. In other words, it'll take physics a length of time to accept the manifestations of the craft, for instance, in distorted atmosphere, in physical levitation, for instance, to the craft. It'll take them a while until they can discover something they can marry with what they already know. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've had contact with Jack Kasher from the University of Omaha, and he's linked to the Omaha UFO Study Group, and a fellow by the name of Steve Snodgrass has been so perceptive and understanding. I've given him, as the only scientific person, access to all my records, and Steve, if anybody's interested, we do a discussion back and forth a little bit on some of the concepts that are, or some of the phenomena that's seen in during UFO encounters. And did I say it was the Omaha UFO Study Group?
Yes, you did. Do they have a website, John?
Yeah, it's omahaufostudygroup.com, and there's a John Foster portal, what they call the John Foster portal, and then we do discussions on the electronic fog and wormholes and that sort of thing.
Well, I'll bet that's fascinating, and I'm sure many of our listeners are going to want to check that out. And quickly, speaking of websites, let me tell our listeners that John has his books available, To Earth from Heaven, and Imminent Discovery, available on Amazon.com. These are books by John Foster, a must-have. And also at his website, fosterufos.com. So I want to encourage you to check that out. In fact, as John mentioned earlier tonight, it would be great to go to his website this evening and check out some of these illustrations as we're talking to him. It's a great opportunity to have a visual experience with the discussion. Go ahead, John.
One thing I wanted to mention, too, I've read a lot of books, and one of the books that just hits the nail right on the head is Eric Julian's Science of Extraterrestrials. And I think you can go to eBay or different sources, and there are some used books, although I think it's out of production or it's not published anymore. And I think Eric does have a website. He was discredited a little bit for a prediction that he tried to make, and but I can say that the phenomenon that I witnessed matches Eric's book, Information in the Science of Extraterrestrials, very well. It also supports Zachariah Sitchin's Earth Chronicles. There are several books that Zachariah wrote.
Well, I want to get into Zachariah Sitchin with you tonight, but I want to mention the interest that the visitors have in ecological conservation or the condition of our planet, the natural state of our planet. Do you want to talk about that for just a little bit?
Yeah, there was one encounter in particular. A friend of mine and I were working at a remote logging camp in the deep wilderness in Wyoming, and our boss wanted to show us a certain location in the mountains nearby that nobody knew about very much. And so he took us up there, and we had encounters all day long, and they were oriented towards taking care of the forest and the wildlife in the forest, including the creatures. There was a lake nearby. It was Bog Lake, and this was north of Du Bois, Wyoming, if anybody's interested. At any rate, we entered the craft, and the familiar strangers were there, and they told us that essentially, if you're going to ruin the forest, don't cut the trees, but if you can save the forest, they intimated it was okay to cut the trees. So you have to, in other words, not destroy the forest. And also that humans were responsible for caring for the wildlife and so forth. And that doesn't mean that we have to turn the earth over to the wildlife, but as we progress, we need to care for that.
And respect.
They also, Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Right, definitely. And we also have to, in order to do that, we need to understand the science of nature, you might say, only it's well beyond what we understand now. But we need to know the weather patterns for certain areas and so forth, and know what.
But perhaps also the consciousness of nature. Because in your chapter 8 of To Earth from Heaven, you mention about, now the listeners aren't going to know what I'm talking about, but I'm going to let you give some backfill. You mentioned about the horses being led towards self-improvement. So now, and I, you know, of course I happen to feel and see as a clairvoyant that all things are conscious. So I want you to tell the listeners about the experience that happened in Chapter 8 with the horses.
Okay, there were two encounters. One night that lasted all night. That's Chapter 9 of Imminent Discovery. And the next night, we were told to come back and bring a fellow who worked with us, and we went back, and we observed to make a long story short, the first encounter, we rode horses out of body, and we were told how the horses served humans, but they had their own agenda. And the second night, the horses were stampeding, and we saw craft kind of herding them. They were above the herd of horses. Anyway, later we found the horses grazing in an open meadow, and we were dealing with another craft in a voice, and we saw a craft hovering over the horses, and I wanted to go over and see what was happening. And the voice told me to stay back and leave them alone because they were working with the horses just as they worked with humans so that the horses could improve themselves. And that was basically that. But what's interesting, later on that summer, I got a job that was wrangling several horses from around 25 horses. And considered them friends. I could communicate back and forth mentally. And I could give them commands sometimes, and they would do what I was thinking at them to do.
That's a beautiful experience to be that connected to an animal, particularly a horse, is a magnificent creature.
Yeah, and we had a fella on a quarter horse ranch nearby. He would ride a horse into town on Saturday evening, where everybody gathered, and just kind of, you know, in a small town on Saturday night, they would have different conversations. And he would ride back and forth across the street, and he didn't have a bridle or reins. That horse would do what he wanted him to do. So I thought that was fantastic.
Well, that is incredible. And your observation about the possibility that horses are being groomed, pardon the pun, but for intergalactic citizenship, the same as human beings, is very profound.
Yeah, in other words, it indicates a progression from the smallest animal to human beings. Who we are the only animal on Earth, I think, that have the ability to care for all other animals and to have a love and not kill for food or whatever, except for green, maybe.
When we consider, yeah.
We do kill for food, and my father was with the Game Commission in Nebraska most of his life, and they found that even though people hunt, that if you maintain hunting, that maintains the population of a certain species. And so hunting is not totally bad, that it actually provides an opportunity for individual animals to live over a certain period of time.
Again, now, everything in balance.
Right. Another thing to keep in mind is that nature is violent. That almost all animals kill for food and so forth.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, when we consider our tremendous potential to uplift and to nurture and to take care of the planet and all of our relations, it is so inspiring to see what we're capable of becoming, what we were meant to become. We wish that everyone would get that kind of vision and understand really what humanity is meant to be. And I feel that this is what we're being guided toward discovering. Not just those of us that have had these experiences, of course, but it needs to spread out to the larger collective of humanity.
But the journey is wonderful also. Learning what is a better way is wonderful to experience. In other words, one of the conclusions that I got out of my entire encounters was that the only thing that's real is what you think and how you feel. And that's where the truth really is. And you can become something more, and we're encouraged to become something more.
Well, that's just exquisite. I was going to end the program with that, John.
Oh, you were. So sorry.
That was so good. Well, we had a bite of the cake in the middle here.
Okay.
That is beautiful. Let's talk about the gods. Can we do that?
Sure, you bet.
So tell us about that.
Well, I did quite a bit of study or research, you might say, on the practical level. I'm no great researcher or anything like that, but I noticed, especially Zachariah Sitchin's writings of the Sumerian civilization, which was at that time the oldest civilization known to man, encountered ET gods, and gods nurtured humankind throughout the ages, according to Sitchin, and eventually the Hebrew God came in, and then the person of Jesus and the person of Buddha and so forth. And humans seem to progress. Well, when I analyzed my encounters and compared it to the old stories of the gods, they're very, very similar. Things happened, and including the light showing up and hearing the voice from the light. And I think we talked about the Archangel Michael before, and we were told that the light was Michael. And well, I'll just throw this in. I think I mentioned it before, but my oldest daughter remembers an incident at Dillon Lake, and that's in Chapter 5, I believe, where the light showed up, and I was talking with the voice back and forth. And so she is a witness to the fact that the voice did speak from the light, and that beyond any reasonable doubt establishes, you know, that that was real. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the story is just huge and complex. We mentioned the familiar strangers last time, and the familiar strangers are given the assignment to build buildings and help an influx of orphans into the middle of the United States, as well as adults. And we're to build the first building at a certain location. I was shown, given extreme detail on how to construct the building, that given the specifications for the size of bolts and the mixture of mortar and so forth. And this is very similar, in my opinion, to the story about building the temple, and the temple being given, the plans being given to Moses, and later to his son David, and then eventually built by the next generation. And at any rate, Moses was given the location. He actually lived what appeared to me to be a future time travel, where he was shown the building after it was built. But of course, in physical three-dimensional life, you could go to that location and the temple was not there. Well, although this is not as grandiose as and as important as the temple of Solomon.
Who's to say? You know, that it's just a different building for a different purpose. But what you're talking about here is the influence of extraterrestrial or other dimensional intelligence in human affairs, even to the point of building buildings and making structures, and also
right,
the plans for human future.
The process. the process was very similar.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point.
And you state in your book, To Earth from Heaven, that the gods have a plan.
Yeah, that it was obvious because of the buildings, for instance, and other people were given similar information, and so it's obvious that the entities that I ran in can be compared to the old, the ancient gods, and they're still active today. It was my conclusion. They do have a plan because of what I was shown in the future time travels, and what the other people were given. Some people were given detailed information also.
Can you summarize that a little bit for us?
Well, it's just what I call project, which is to build buildings and to provide a place. In my part is to build buildings to provide a place for people to study, and the buildings are what I call schools.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that, but
yeah,
when I'm
spiritual
talking
learning
about,
center. Go ahead.
I'm talking about the bigger perspective for humanity. This was your assignment. This was your job. But
yeah.
On the bigger scope of things, what do you think the plan is, John?
Well, I don't really know. It's just is to help humankind progress. There's a lot of things that we can throw into that pot, and one is that the Chapter 9 of Imminent Discovery was a time when they said they were preparing people for a time when they would return and take them away. Those willing and qualified would go. Those not would stay and do something else. Also, they said they were here to save humankind, and they told me this more than a handful of times, you might say, and the way they did it was to enlist help from people like myself and, of course, other contactees, and you are probably included in that also. There's a connection between the spiritual movement in the world and also the UFO phenomenon.
No doubt.
And so on and so on. I mean, it's just huge. It's at the base of human existence. This is a natural thing, in my opinion, and it has occurred throughout history constantly, but more intensely at certain periods when they told me when things were going awry or when things were dangerous, they were allowed to interfere with our affairs.
What you just said about, I just wanted to underline that and put it in bold, so to speak.
Yeah.
This phenomenon is central to the human experience, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, now, I just about died because of the phenomenal things that I was discovering, and that's why I called it imminent discovery, is that I feel they're extremely important. There's extremely important information there that explains not only the mysteries of history, but also of science and religion and many other things. And then as I lived with that over the years, it's been my first recollections were spring 1986. And let's see, what is that now? That's 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after 26 years, I'm becoming more comfortable with that, and I don't have nearly as many health problems. I about died of a heart attack I had when I was first asking the public because I thought that people would not accept it, and I would be considered insane and so
you
forth.
You were so stressed. You were so
yeah.
stressed.
Now, things, there's been many, many things that have evolved that I was shown would evolve over the last 26 years. And, so to me, this is more proof that what I was accurate and true. The more you live with it, it takes time. The more you live with it, the more real it is, and the more comfortable you become with it.
So you'd say that patience is key.
Yeah, and just mm-hmm. try to understand, and like we discussed before, if you want to know, ask. but be prepared. One little side story here is that there's a gal by the name of Ida Canterbury that wrote some books, and Leo Sprinkle put me in contact with her because she was having ongoing encounters. And she called me one time, and she said to be prepared. If you ask, hang on to your hat, because the things you're going to go through are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And that was certainly true for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I might say I don't like to go public. I don't like to be put in the spotlight and that sort of thing. But I feel that it's the meaning of the story is so important for people and can help them out so much in all of those areas that I am willing to promote the books and so forth. I don't know if I can give talks or that anymore. My wife and I both have gone through serious health problems, and I don't know if we're up to that, but we'll see.
Well, the writing of the book was a very important task for you and your life's mission, John, and it's out there to help people, and it's something they can hold in their hands and share your journey and learn right along with you and know that they, too, are not crazy, that this is an experience that needs to be plumbed and you have to grow with it. And it is really about spiritual awakening is really what it's about, and enlarging our perspective of an interdimensional, multidimensional reality, which is all around us all the time.
Everyone has a purpose.
Absolutely, and everyone needs to know that they have a purpose. You're right. Now, what about the holographic universe, John? Can you touch on that for a minute? I'd like to touch on that for a second or two.
Yeah, Eric Julian's book, The Science of Extraterrestrials, as I mentioned before, touches on this very nicely. And also, there was a book written by Michael Talbot called The Holographic Universe. And Michael and Eric both point out that what we see and touch and feel physically is really an illusion, that there is much more to it. I can describe Michael Talbot's description of a scientific explanation. Do we have time
for
that?
Sure. I'd like you to tell the listeners about that.
Well, this would be rough, and I don't know if I would exactly write, but if you take an apple and you you shine a light on the apple with a laser and then receive the image of the apple through a mirror, and there's a mirror that directs it to part of it to another mirror, and then part of it to a separate mirror that's in a different location. So we have two mirrors, and then those mirrors reflect the image to a special film. And there is a, when the film is developed, there is a wave pattern that appears on the mirror, not a image of the apple. I mean, on the film, not the image of the apple. And then it's like if you threw several pebbles into the water and you would see the rings, you know, that would interlock and so forth. Well, if you shine the film after it's developed, see the image of the apple in midair on the other side of the film. And it takes some kind of medium, like smoke or fog, which is very similar to my encounters, to see the apple in midair. Well, then the question is asked, which is the real apple? Is it the original apple? Is it the film, or is it the apple image in midair on the other side of the film? And especially when you consider that the original apple is nothing more, science believes, than pure energy of special kind that's manifested in atoms and molecules and so forth. So what is the real apple is the question. So in this case, he's saying that what we see is simply an image. It's not the essence, the mother thing that it actually is.
It's not solid, yes. And or maybe it's solid and energy together, depending on your point of view or perspective. And that would explain, too, how you're able to walk through walls.
Possibly, yeah. They manipulated the time travel. They manipulated the other dimensional overlap of our dimension and so forth.
Right,
it wasn't me.
Right.
It was them. So who are they? And, you know, is
right.
the question.
Well, I want to talk about time travel in a second, but let me just say, with regard to your excellent description of holographic reality, that was well done, John.
Okay.
Once again, we find that the ancients knew what science is just beginning to discover. The Kabbalah, with its version of the Tree of Life, describes the source origination point as the Ein Sof, the male energy creating the female energy, and descending down through different dimensions and frequencies of existence, the reflections from the original source as it descends down into this earth plane, that all reality is simply a reflection of the origination of the source of all life. So that is exactly the description, as you've described it, of how the hologram works in conveying the image of the apple. So you're really profound that metaphysically this has been known for eons of time, and that science is now, through, because we've become so logically oriented and linear in our thinking, we feel like we have to prove this with a scientific modality when the ancients have known this all along. Really
well,
good stuff, huh?
Yeah, well, especially if you go back and you realize that reality is simply what you feel. And what you feel physically and other dimensionally, you might say. That's what it boils down to.
As a reflection of our consciousness.
I'm looking at a coffee cup right now, and that coffee cup is only real in my mind. It's not real sitting there on the table because it can't exist.
That is a very important understanding when we endeavor to heal people, when we endeavor to cross dimensions, when we endeavor to raise our frequency, is to recognize that very thing. And if we can do that and incorporate that into our consciousness, anything is possible.
Yeah, and so we're creators, and by golly, we better be careful what we create.
Absolutely. You know? Bet. And our audience is going to really be applauding with that one. I think we need an applause for that, because that's right on.
But according to my encounters, there is a plan. And it's not necessarily the obvious is not necessarily the object of the encounters, whether it be spiritual or UFO. The object is to get you to do and think certain things. If you, like I, had assigned to you what might be called other dimensional beings. Did you get my point there?
Yes, absolutely. I'm all ears. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
and that's an important point, because, excuse me, just let me say that when we want to take things so literally and try to figure it out with our minds in a linear fashion, we get confounded. But it's really important point that you just made, that it isn't always the objective, what we think it is.
The only thing that's real is feeling.
Well, that's really important, John. I'm advocating to my clients all the time, follow their hearts, let yourself feel the truth.
Yeah, even the visual, we see something, like I explained before, or this is what I believe, is we see something and that gives us a feeling, and that's what's real. It's not the thing.
Thank you for that. Now, let's talk about some time travel.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about that, John.
Yeah.
How would you, I know that it occurred during distorted atmosphere.
Yeah, there would be a fog or a haze that show up and a craft would manifest. And if the friend and I, or my relative and I, would get on board, and then the familiar strangers, same people for the entire period of 46 years or so, would be on board. But most of this happened during the 1950s. And
in fact, you were shown things, buildings, landscape.
Yeah, we would land at certain locations. We were shown buildings, and most of them were schools, spiritual learning centers, housing units for the orphans and so forth. And we were told and shown what we were to do in the future. But the phenomena was really interesting because we would stop sometimes at certain times and locations along the way. So it would be a different time and, of course, a different location than the ultimate aim or the ultimate location we were headed for. And, for instance, one time from Sheridan Creek Fire Yard Cabin, we landed near Rawlins, Wyoming, and we saw an oil storage installation, and we were told that humans were not doing a good job with storing oil because they were spilling too much and they needed to improve their techniques. We stopped at another place in western Nebraska, and we witnessed an abduction of a couple coming down the highway. And I have a suspicion that that couple was my wife and I later in life, which is weird. the car was very similar to a car that we owned. We were shown a rest stop at another time and location, a rest stop on I-80 in the middle of Nebraska. And we were stopped in Lincoln and showed several things, and then we ended up in another location in eastern Nebraska, which was the first school we're to build. The story just goes on and on and on. It's very detailed.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the important things is that there was one fellow that was there. He's the short, bald man in the Eminent Discovery. And he was active in most all the things. Well, when I met these people in 1987, I discovered they were doing some of the exact same things I was shown they would do. And then as time went on, we experienced other things that we had experienced during the 1950s time travels. And I just almost lost my mind because it was really hard to handle. But then one of the things happened. The short, bald man died. He was a friend by that time. And so I knew that things did not have to happen exactly the way that I was shown, that I'm a part of the process. His death actually proved that to me.
So free will has a bearing in it.
Yes, right. It's my decision. So one of the things I did is I got really ticked during some periods that my life was being orchestrated, and so I rebelled and I decided to do certain things on my own. And then later I realized that I had passed the test, that's what they're doing, is grooming people to be self-sufficient and to make decisions and to be able to cooperate with other people to accomplish certain goals and so forth.
And
so
to
it's up to
responsibility.
Yes, it's up to us to do it. It's not up to the gods according to their plan.
Right,
they can only influence us to do what fits the overall major plan, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend that has encounters, and he calls it controlled chaos.
Controlled chaos. That's pretty apt.
Yeah, or organized chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all given an opportunity to do certain things, and as we struggle with that, as we turn the opportunity down or accept it, then we grow and become something more than we are. And it's just an ongoing thing, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's like nature, and we can celebrate every second that we do it, if we develop the right spirit.
Well, that's beautiful. I think through all of the anguish and the stress and agony of mind and the things that you went through, you have eventually arrived at a place of peace and to recognize the joy of your spirit, the joy of existence, appreciation of every day that you live, because it is a gift. And I do believe, John, that our essential nature is one of profound joy, and that we come here to experience this, but our natural state is one of bliss. Where we come from, there is no suffering, there is joy, light, and love. And this is just a side trip that we take on our cosmic journeys to help evolve and develop, let's say, the cosmic ideal, the expansion of life and life forms and possibilities. We are explorers and travelers. Mm-hmm.
To become something more than we are right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And I want to quote from your book, John. We're just about out of time here, but this is from John's book, To Earth from Heaven, and it is his chapter 21, Living Back in Physical Reality. I want to tell you here, I want to quote John, what he had to say, because I think it's so beautiful. John's talking about himself here now, and I quote, "Yet I now can simply live my present me, my am, my more than was, and my more than what will be, might be. I can still live my life to its fullest because, even in the light of the eternal, life can remain a river flowing toward me. If I choose, I can simply react to the newness of what the living waters have to offer. And what they offer, if I choose to accept it, is grace and glory beyond my wildest dreams." So that is really beautiful, John, and I feel like it's very descriptive of the ultimate reality and the ultimate truth, that all is good, all is right. In this game, when times get difficult and the world goes crazy, as it's now experiencing, and we in our own lives have many trials, and we have to go through the 3D experience. Ultimately, you just spoke the truth there in that book.
Yeah, well, I was when I began the book, I started with the idea that life was like a river flowing towards me, but that I eventually learned to live by considering who I was, who I am, and who I will be. And I do that. I consider all encounters, the UFO and otherwise, from birth to death. And but in the end, life has to be, on Earth, has to be somewhat linear, and it's linear for a purpose, and that is to grow. So even in the light of the eternal, I can still accept life as a river flowing towards me.
That's beautiful, and it's so Buddhist. And there's an old saying, I'm sure many have heard it, what do you do before you become enlightened? You chop wood and you carry water. What do you do after you become enlightened? You chop wood and you carry water.
I've never heard that. That's beautiful.
It's about being in the 3D as even after you've become raised in your awareness and consciousness. So, John, you truly are an enlightened individual, and it's been our privilege to have you with us. I want to thank you. The last 3 programs have been a real privilege for me, and it's been wonderful for our audience. We really appreciate you being here on the planet with us and doing the task that you were sent to do and helping us, all of us, on our personal journeys as well.
Yeah, I thank you, and it's been a pleasure again.
All right. We'll talk again, I hope, another time.
Okie doke.
Good night now.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.